Hello and welcome to Virtus Voices. This is Joe Terranova, Senior Managing Director and Chief Market Strategist for Virtus Investment Partners. Today I'm excited to be joined by Eric Hess, Managing Director, Portfolio Manager, and High Yield Sector Head at Newfleet Asset Management. Eric is also responsible for credit research of the energy sector. Eric, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So, Eric, I want to begin with just understanding, in the wake of the global financial crisis, there's been a significant underperformance from the high-yield energy market. Not so much in explaining why the underperformance, but if you could, just kind of in an educational capacity, walk the listener through how we should be thinking about the last 10 years and how it aligns with an investor's portfolio moving forward.
Sure. So just to put the high-yield energy market in some context of history, prior to the shale boom, which sort of began in around the 2009-10 period, energy was a small part of the high-yield market at about 5%. And significantly, it avoided major defaults in the 2001 kind of telecom bust and in the 2008-09 financial crisis. So prior to that, the market was functioning well, and investors generally liked energy because it hadn't defaulted, and you had kind of physical assets. You had scarce oil and gas reserves backing your bonds. Then the shale boom happened, and all of a sudden we had lots of domestic reserves that could be tapped. Hundreds of companies sprung up and needed capital to develop those reserves. Lots of that capital was provided via the high-yield market, and energy as a proportion of the high-yield market grew from 5% to peak of 16% in the middle of 2014. And then the massive supply of oil and gas that came from all that money that flew into those reserves sort of disrupted the global supply-demand balance, and we had a sharp crash of oil and gas prices. And since then, the industry, the high yield, especially energy producers, have been struggling, seeing spikes of defaults, and you've had lots of fallen angels that have come into the market. And so we've now had 5 or 6 years of this large underperformance. And I think some people might be surprised when you look at the industry today. Now it's shrunk down to 12% as we've had names flush out from defaults. But I think people were surprised that it's still yielding almost double the market index yield, and why hasn't this fixed itself in a faster way? And some of the issue is that companies need to be pushed into default, and right now we've had the ability to, you've had some price spikes, which have allowed companies to tap markets and extend maturities. We've had companies be able to sell assets to keep alive. So these companies are very active in trying to avoid bankruptcy because for them, as long as they stay out, there's always the chance that there's a spike in commodity prices, which sort of bail them out.
Sounds like you're describing somewhat the last 4 years for the high-yield energy market, where it's just been a survival ship. Bankruptcies have been predominant, but certainly there's been a change in how the constitution of the high-yield market presents itself versus, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. As that constitution currently presents itself, Eric, do you view the high-yield energy market as being this overall dramatic headwind to the taxable fixed income market itself?
From our perspective, we're conservatively positioned. I don't expect this to resolve itself in the near future. I think we're still going to have a couple years where if oil prices and gas prices especially stay at the, if the strip is accurate, so where future prices are projected to be, then yeah, we're going to have another 2, 3, 4 years of elevated defaults and companies that really can't generate any returns. And we're bond investors, and in our funds, we want to provide our clients with consistent income. And so we're looking for areas which have very attractive risk-reward ratio with a focus on downside avoidance. And a lot of these names are not really consistent with that. Maybe they make better equity investments where you have unlimited upside, because a lot of these bond investments, you have capped upside, but you have very large loss potential if commodity prices don't rally off these levels. And that's sort of the framework which we position ourselves. And to give you an example of how that is put into practice, when oil bottomed in the spring of 2016 and started rallying off of that, we went and added energy investments, but we didn't go and buy the highest cost or the riskiest or the lowest dollar price bonds to try to buy these lottery tickets or hit huge returns. We bought basically investment grade companies or very high quality double Bs or the very best of high yield companies that where we found we had margin for error, where we didn't need oil to go back to 70, we just needed oil to bounce a little bit and stabilize, and these companies had long leeways until they'd get into any type of financial distress, and all those companies are still around today. And that's the benefit of our multi-sector approach, is that we can buy, we don't have to just be siloed. I can buy energy in the investment grade market. We own a lot of crossover names, where names where the ratings are split between investment grade and high yield. And we can also buy, you know, sovereign oil companies if we think the better risk return ratio is in those names, as a way to take our, to gain exposure to energy. Generally, if you looked at just our domestic high yield book, I would say we're cautiously positioned.
Cautiously positioned, but finding opportunity. Would you agree with your finding opportunity in Permian E&P names, some of the LNG, which we really haven't spoken about? We certainly could do a much longer Virtus Voices on LNG itself, and then in the midstream also.
Yeah, if you just looked at our book and you wanted to pull some themes out, low-cost E&Ps, which would be, as you said, in the Permian Basin. The LNG investments, you have long-term contracts with high-quality counterparties, so the prices in some respects aren't even really that important. It's more about the contract structure is what we're lending against. And the midstream names have very large, diverse assets and are free cash flow positive. Arguably, they pay a lot of it out in dividends, but they can always cut those if they need to, and so we find those areas a lot more attractive, and you're still typically picking up incremental yield to a non-energy bond.
All right, so to summarize it again, I wanted to have this educational conversation to present some points of emphasis. Tell me if you agree with these points. First and foremost, the constitution of the high-yield energy market certainly looks a lot different over the last 5 years than it looked prior to that. We accept that as investors. Secondarily, we understand that there needs to be time to work through some potential bankruptcies and cleaning up of some of the credits in the high-yield energy sector. But lastly, and I think most importantly, what I'm hearing is there are select opportunities, and you've been able at Newfleet to find those opportunities in LNG, in gas, in the Permian E&Ps, and the midstreams. Would those be the point of emphasis that you would love the investors and the listeners to walk away from this call with today?
Yes, I think that's a great summary.
Okay. Well, Eric, I look forward in the future to further conversations. I think as we prepared for this, we said when you're talking about high-yield energy, you could probably spend an hour discussing it. So I thank you for your wonderful insights and your time this afternoon. To our audience, as always, thank you for tuning in for an episode of Virtus Voices. For more information, please visit virtus.com.